following is an unrehearsed interview with United States Senator Chuck Grassley speaking to you from Washington, D.C. Participating in today's public affairs program are Marion Bailey of KMCD Radio in Fairfield and Bill Shea of the Fort Dodge Messenger. The first question will come from KMCD's Marion.
Hey there, Senator Grassley. I'm in Fairfield, and like many communities in the Midwest, starting to battle emerald ash borer at a cost of tens of thousands of dollars. As a member of the Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry Committee, what is being discussed at the federal level to help states and communities handle this problem?
As far as I know, at least in my congressional discussions, even as a member of the Agriculture Committee, there's been no discussion of it. Now, that's my answer is in regard to members, but I don't even have an update for you on what staff people might be talking about, and particularly, obviously, until we have a hearing or until I made a special phone call, I would not know what the bureaucrats are doing in the Department of Agriculture. I know that at the local levels, there's very, very persistent regulation of not to transport any ash out of a county when you are using it for bonfires. Make sure you've burned all of it. And then cities are taking a very aggressive approach to cut down the trees ahead of time and make sure that they do what they can to stop the spread. Now, as a matter of public policy, I don't know whether your question would be a legitimate point of discussion here in Washington, D.C., because a precedent for what's happening for ash would be some disease with pines in Colorado and the Dutch elm disease of the 1960s in a lot of parts. And in either one of those cases, the only thing that was taken on the part of the federal government to do what you can to stop the spread of it. And I don't associate any money with the effort to fight it. There might be some programs for replacement, but as far as everything I've read about the emerald ash, there is nothing that can be done about it. There's no treatment, or there is a treatment, but the treatment is so expensive, you don't find it actuarially sound thing to be doing. Bill?
Congress is working right now to make some reforms in the VA to address these treatment, the delays that veterans have in receiving treatment. My question is, what is the underlying cause? Why do we have these delays in the first place, and how do we fix them?
Well, I think you're going to find it, well, at least this at this point, I better say this is hinted at. There's nothing proven along this line. But there's enough of my colleagues, in fact, I probably have even spoken along this line. If there's fraudulent gathering of statistics for the sole purpose of, well, number one, to deny care, but more importantly, if there's fraudulent to make a particular enterprise or particular individuals look good so that they get the benefit of the bonuses that are available based upon performance, you know, there's some hint of prosecution for those things. How far that goes, I don't know, and whether it's actually determined yet, if that can be prosecuted, I don't have a final answer for you. But at least there's a great deal of discussion along that line. The answer to your question is how could it happen? It's happening because people are incompetent, not doing their job. But then to get rid of that incompetence and overcome the incompetence, there's two things in the legislation. One would be the ability to fire middle management people without the normal hearing and red tape process that you have in most government employment. And the second one is to allow people that are on waiting list beyond 14 days to use non-VA facilities. plus an additional opportunity for people that are more than 40 miles away from a VA facility to be able to use a non-VA facility and have the VA pay for it. Okay, back to Marion.
Sure. Switching to education, with so many college grads entering the workforce in debt, could you explain the efforts behind the Know Before You Owe Student Act?
Yeah. It's to get people start thinking in terms of education being a service, not an end in itself. Once you look at it as a service, then you look at what does that service do for you? And it's obviously to train you to do something so you can make a living. And then how do you finance it? Presently, there's some procedures in place within the federal government where the university has to notify you of the total amount of money you can get for a one-year loan, as opposed to thinking in terms of how much you really need to borrow to go to college, and consequently people borrowing more than they should. And then you get to people not thinking in terms of I borrow X number of dollars to go to college. Am I going to be able to have the ability to get a job to pay that off? So there's a ratio created between the amount of money borrowed and what you might get in the first job 4 years down the road, and that's kind of a difficult thing to predict, but you'd use the best figures you can. How much are you going to make, and are you going to make enough to pay off the loan? The other thing is to get the federal government thinking like a bank. You know, you, Marion, go to borrow. They're going to look at the first thing. Does Marion have the ability to pay it back? Do you know that the federal government never looks at your ability to pay it back? They just look, are you qualified? Are you entitled to the loan? You get a loan. We're trying to get the government to think in terms of doing what banks are required under regulation to do. Look at who your consumer of the debt is. Can they pay it back? To do that in relationship to what the field you want to major in, what that will pay. If the banks did like the federal government does right now, they'd be charged with predatory lending. So you're trying to get a little bit of business into the thinking about the loans that people get, their ability to pay it off. And then one last thing that the bill does, I shouldn't say one last thing because I haven't named everything that's in the bill, but the one last thing is to get the universities, which are working with the students, to do what I've already said, but beyond that, to actually do counseling to people about how much you ought to be borrowing to go to college. And I use the example of Grandview University, Des Moines, and University of Northern Iowa. They have shown that just by good counseling, they can cut down on the students borrow less, and student debt has been going down instead of up like it does at most universities. Bill.
Would you favor a congressional investigation into the circumstances of the trade to get Sergeant Bergdahl back?
Yeah, I think, I'll tell you, when you say look at investigation, we would call that oversight here, and there is oversight on that going on the committees of jurisdiction, which would be basically the Armed Services Committee of our state. And I have written letters to the Attorney General in my oversight capacity as a member of the Judiciary Committee to get the legal justification that supposedly was given vocally or by email to the president that he wouldn't be violating the law if he didn't follow the law that requires the president to notify Congress 30 days ahead of time before they release people from prison. Thank you, Marion and Bill, for participating in today's public affairs program. This has been Senator Chuck Grassley reporting to the people of Iowa.